of the Lubavitch Rebbe. So let's begin with Parshas Korach. So the first question with Parshas Korach, then we know that Korach creates this debate. Pasuk tells us, and I'll just show it to you here in a second, the Pasuk tells us, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahas ben Levi, that Korach takes for himself this little gathering, including Dasan and Aviram, who we've heard about before, Ve'on ben Peles b'nei Reuven. And here's what it says, Vayakumu lifnei Moshe, Pasuk Beis, V'anashim b'nei Yisrael chamishim masayim. They gathered 250 people. Now, these people that they gathered were very, very important people. They were the leaders. Once again, we're finding ourselves in the last few parashiyos dealing with leaders. And Nisi'ei Eidah, Kremu et Anshei Shem. So Pasuk Gimel tells us, Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. They gathered to Moshe and Aaron. Ve'amru aleihem rav lochem, ki cho ha'ida kulam kedoshim. Everyone is holy. Umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. So what I would like to do first is just to talk about the beginning of the parsha, which is really dominated by this entire story, but then actually to focus on something at the end of the parsha. The first question about Korach is, when does this debate with Korach actually begin? When is this fight? So the Ibn Ezra writes, the Ibn Ezra actually says it happens earlier. It happens earlier, and it's recorded now at Har Sinai, when they transferred the ritual privileges from the firstborns to the Levium as a result of the Egel. Rebels began to get upset, and they said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you did this, it was on your own power, and that's when it happened. That's the opinion of the Ibn Ezra, that even though Korach is in Bamidbar now, it really, really happened earlier. The Ramban says, no way, he agrees with the premise of the Ibn Ezra, but he argues on the timing. So he says, you're right, Ibn Ezra, that that was their argument. And you're right that they were upset then, but they waited. Because who would want to fight with Moshe Rabbeinu after Kabbalah HaTorah? That was, nobody could fight with Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the top warrior. Nobody, you couldn't do anything wrong to Moshe. But once they already seen Bahaloscha, Shalach, the Meraglim, all right. Now we know he's a little bit weaker. This is when they attack. So the question is, what exactly are they arguing about? And we've done this in previous years, especially in the women's class. So I don't want to take sort of too much time. What exactly is their argument about? Now I'll share with you an interesting idea first. The first is that when this debate happens between Korach, we know that the showdown is that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to have a debate, and whichever fire pan HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes, that'll be the one. And the question is, in this week's parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu gets all upset at Korach. What are you doing? What's the matter with you? And yet, in Paloscha, when he was told about Eldad and Medad prophesying in the camp, he said, oh, what a wonderful thing. I wish everyone could be Nevi'im. So which one is it? Does he want everybody to be holy, or does he only want some people to be holy? So Rabbi Jonathan Sacks has a beautiful piece. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks says there are two forms of or dimensions of leadership. One is power, and the other is influence. And often, he says, it's a beautiful idea. It is something to think about as you read through the parasha, and something to think about over Shabbos. We confuse the two. After all, those who have power often have influence. And those who have influence have power. But they're opposite. And what he suggests, and I'll just share with you quickly, is that when I have power and I give you some of it, I have less power. If I have influence and I give you some of it, I have the same amount of influence. In fact, you know, being the yahrzeit of Lubavitcher Rebbe, look at the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Somebody who in his life really influenced other people, whose sole mission was to impact and inspire Jews for wherever they were, whatever backgrounds they were in. And the legacy of the Lubavitcher Rebbe is that Chabad Shlichus is stronger than it has ever been. That's influence. When you influence others and when you are able to care about other Jews in such a way, that's one of the things the Rebbe said at one of his first Farbringens. In fact, I think it's his first Farbringen. in January of 1951, the Rebbe becomes the seventh Rebbe in 1950. It was a big debate as to who to become the Rebbe, but he obviously got the position. And at his first Fabringen, he mentioned this idea that we have to reach all the Jews. Okay, but let's move on a little bit. If you go down a little bit here, we'll see that what was this debate about? So look at Rav Hirsch. Says Rav Hirsch, Korach, Dalson, and Aviram presented themselves to Moshe after they had collected 250 men. Okay, first he says, this is an amazing piece of Rav Hirsch. He says, the whole community, and indeed not Kula as a unit, but Kulam, its individuals are holy and present in their midst. Every individual, the 600,000, is holy and therefore near to God. And so no priests are required to bring God near to them by expressing their thoughts and feelings on their behalf. So according to Rav Hirsch, what Korach is saying is, I don't need you. I don't need a leader or a Kohen. I am perfectly able to connect to God on my own. He requires no prophets to make his word reach these 600,000. Hence, God is near to all of them. And the truth is, by the way, we don't disagree with this idea that everyone can reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But often, though, we need leaders and we need people to help us connect. And they don't take place of us. Right? A gadol, a posek, a gadol hador doesn't take the place of my davening, the place of my connection. It's supposed to help me. But they were saying, we don't need any of this. We're all that holy. And in fact, the Medrash here makes a similar point, that we all have the same equal connection. Okay. But let me just share with you, and we're going to go through it quickly because, we did this in other years, but it is worth noting, and it's a piece from Rabbi Soloveitchik, but just to give it a little bit of background, it is one of the most, to me, important pieces of Rabbi Soloveitchik that there is to learn. And it's an essay he has called The Common Sense Rebellion. He says the following. He says that if you go through this debate, he says there are three levels of knowledge. He says the Torah describes the architect Bezalel with Chachma, Tzvuna, and Da'as. Chachma is specialized scholarship, right? Bina or Tzvuna you can analyze. And Da'as is like common sense. Okay, so Rabbi Soloveitchik says the rallying cry of Korach was common sense. And now we know there's two issues with Korach. On the one hand, Korach said, who the heck are you? You're nepotism. You did it for yourself. You're in it for your own good. I also have a stake in that leadership. But there's a whole other side to Korach's debate. Korach is arguing that if you look at the psukim, I'm sorry, if you look at the medrash, Korach has two arguments. Number one, he says, let's say there's a house that is full of Sifrei Torah, right? Now, I don't know, Aaron knows, and I had a Torah in my house when we had the riots, who we had to take, sadly, Torahs out of our homes, out of our shuls into our homes. But now, Baruch Hashem, they're back. But let's say you had a house full of Sifrei Torah. So Korach says, hey, Moshe, right? Or as the kids would say, hey, Rabbi, if you have a house full of Sifrei Torah, does it need a mezuzah? So Moshe Rabbeinu says, of course it needs a mezuzah. What's the argument? Korach says, well, one second. If the point of the mezuzah is for protection, reminder of God, I have full of Sifrei Torah everywhere. I don't need a mezuzah. And then he says to Korach, let's say I had a talis that's blue. It's all blue. Do I need a blue string still for tcheles? So Moshe says, of course you do. Of course, if the point of tcheles is to remind me of the rakia, of the horizon, and then the sky, and then Hashem, if I have a full talis that's blue, of course I don't need a string of tcheles. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says it's an amazing, amazing idea. Korach's mantra was that there was another aspect to Judaism, more than just fulfilling the mitzvah. It's how do I feel, right? Rachmana liba boi. I have to feel something. So Korach says, I feel it. If I have a house full of Sifrei Torah, I feel connected. Why do I need a mezuzah? If I feel the heavens and I feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why do I need tcheles? So that's his argument to Moshe. If my talis is blue, why do I need a little string to remind me? And he says to Moshe, that's, if I have a whole Torah, why do I need a mezuzah? And that's really an argument, right? His argument is it about just what I feel, or does the halacha get me there? And this is a major, major, major debate throughout history. The goal of halacha is that it should help me feel that emotion. It has to, Rabbi Soloveitchik says, the halacha induces that emotion. I'll share with you some of the thought of the Rav. Look, for example, I'll skip a little bit. What was right here? Here we go. Korach's claim at the bottom, appeal to common sense in Judaism, was basically a claim that only da'as, not chachma, is involved in the application of halacha. He conceded the legal aspects of halacha require expertise, but there's a psychological and emotional aspect in the observance of mitzvahs. Korach was committed to the doctrine of religious subjectivism, which regards one's personal feelings as primary in religious existence, rachmana liba bayi. And therefore, now I'll stop sharing my screen for a second. Why is this a problem? Why is this an issue? Because if you take this theory all the way to its next level, right? If we were in our actual women's parsha classroom and I would call on someone, I know Sally, you'd have an answer right away. Whether it was right or wrong, you definitely would say it. Okay? It was most likely going to be right. But what's the problem? The problem is, if I can induce that emotion, does it make a difference how I got there? So if I could induce that emotion with, now the real extreme is, let's say I could induce that emotion with a cheeseburger. When I eat a cheeseburger, oh my gosh, the connections and the emotions, it's full. It's overflowing, right? Well, why do I, or let's say Rosh Hashanah. Let's say we got to Shul on Rosh Hashanah and everybody agreed, the shofar does nothing for me. It does nothing for me, no matter how great about Tokeya or Musaf or the Sukkah. The Sukkah just doesn't do it for me. Okay, it doesn't do it for me. So then why would I do it? And therefore, Moshe's argument back is really on two levels. Number one, you do it because God says we do it. And number two, when we do it, that's what induces my emotion. That's what gets my kishkas rolling. That's what creates this feeling of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's where Korach and Moshe disagree. The emotion that is created from the mitzvah and from following halacha, that's what I have to feel. Because if I just leave it to the emotion, then it's very dangerous. I'll never forget, I was once working at a Shavuos program in Palm Springs, California. No matter how great Shavuos is wherever you are, no matter what, anything in Palm Springs, California is better. Okay, so it doesn't make a difference what it is. So a friend of mine was his in-laws lived there, and he asked a few guys to come out for Shavuos. So we went out for Shavuos. It was amazing a few days. And we had a meal, Shavuos. So a few people, it's a very, very small community, and some guy came over to for lunch. So he looks at me and he says, he drove over. I didn't care. First of all, I was getting a free meal, so I wasn't going to say anything. So he looks at me and he says, do you think it was okay that I drove? I didn't make it. I don't know. You drove. Okay. He goes and he looks at his legs and he says, you see these, to walk with these legs, that would be a malacha. What did I do by turning on my car? So I obviously wasn't going to get into an argument with him. But the idea is that if everything is boiled down to just the emotion, then it takes away any relationship to, connection in terms of adherence to halacha. On the other hand, if I just do halacha because that's what I follow and it doesn't create an emotion, that's also a problem. In fact, Professor Isidore Twersky, the great professor from, wrote an article called the Shulchan Aruch Problem. He wrote an article called the Shulchan Aruch Problem. And what he meant by that is the following. And in this article, he develops the following idea. He says that when the Shulchan Aruch was written, there was a major, major concern. The concern would be that halacha would be boiled down to just the halacha. All right, what do? I wake up, check. And I went through my whole day and I could look at my list. Look at what a great Jew. But it was a checklist. There was no emotion. There was no connection. And that's why he says, if you open the Shulchan Aruch, now the Shulchan Aruch is written by Yosef Karo. Yosef Karo eventually moves from Spain and eventually to Tzfat. He spends 30 years writing the Beis Yosef, and then he, after that, writes the Shulchan Aruch. And Rabbi Moshe Isserles, the Rama, who's younger, about 50 years younger, who writes the Ashkenazic edition to the Shulchan Aruch, known as the Rama. If you look, if you open the first halacha and the first chelek of Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim, the halacha says, Yiskaber ka'ariva boker, wake up like a lion to serve Hashem. And right there, the Rama. Now, if you've learned Shulchan Aruch, you know that the Rama, Ramosh Islis, is very, very short, terse, very quick comments, right? Like the Shulchan Aruch will say something, then the Rama will say, Ashkenazim lo nohagin kain, or nohagin kain, or machmir. All of a sudden, the first comment of the Rama is about 50 to 60 words about serving Hashem, Shavisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid, we're always in front of God, all these things. And Professor Tversky writes beautifully, he says, why did the Rama put that in the first comment? Because he says, every halacha that you read from here until any halacha, whether it's Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Tfilin, Hilchos Kiddush, halachas of Pesach, money, kashrus, weddings, whatever it is, every single law that we do is Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Sam. It is putting me in front of God. That's the goal of halacha. The goal of halacha, you know, right before we went into quarantine, we met with our students. We knew we were going into quarantine that Friday. So we met with our eighth graders, me and my colleague, Mrs. Rosenbaum. We met with the eighth graders and we said, listen, this is not snow day. Right? What are we going to take on ourselves? So many students suggested brachos. And one student suggested Asher Yotzar. Because Asher Yotzar, right, especially with our bodies and viruses, but brachos are a way of constant connection with God. I don't just say a bracha, check. Every bracha, everything that, every halacha that I do is meant to induce an emotion. That's the way it works. And Korach worked the opposite direction. Okay, that probably took more time than we needed, but it's such an amazing, amazingly important idea from the Rav about our adherence to halacha. So what I want to do now is I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. I'm going to skip to sort of the next storyline that I want to spend a little bit of time on. Well, let me pull the psukim up in here. Hold on. So first, they obviously have the, right? They take the fire pans. Moshe and Korach take the fire pans. They have this whole, debate. Obviously, it is Korach who loses. Korach is therefore swallowed up by the ground in some kind of earthquake, phenomenon. And that's it. Now, the Jewish people don't stop. And they continue to fight against Moshe and against Aaron, and even after all of this happens. And then they say, we're challenging that Aaron shouldn't necessarily be the Shevet to rule over us. Aaron shouldn't be the Shevet to rule over us. We should still get the chance, at least the firstborns, to still rule in the Beis HaMikdash. So let me share the following. Let's look at the Psukim. Hold on. Okay, Psukim tell us the following. So here, the Psukim tell us, Daber el Aaron, here, Perek Yudzayin Pasuk Yudzayin, Daber el B'nei Yisrael V'kach Meitam Mata. They should each take a staff, okay? This is right after the whole story has already happened, there's another challenge. Take a staff from each Shevet, and ish es shemo tichtov al mateyu. Take your staff, write your name, throw it in to the Ohel Moed. And what's going to happen? What's going to happen is, the pasuk tells us, whichever one of these staffs will sprout, you know, the almonds and the flowers, then will be the shevet that gets to work in the Beis HaMikdash. Great. Every shevet takes the mateh. They write their name. They throw it in. Of course. Aaron's staff is the leader. And the pasuk tells us, "Vayetze Moshe's kol amatos milifnei Hashem." It's an amazing pasuk. Your pasuk chav dalin. They take out the staffs. They throw the staffs to everyone else. Vayiru vayikhu ishmateyu. And what happens? Each shevet goes ahead and actually takes his own staff. And the question is, what do we learn from this story? So first of all, why were they taking the staffs? So the Sforno says, you know why they were taking the staffs? They wanted to make sure. They wanted to make sure that they really didn't win. So even though it was clear that Sheva Levi's Mata had sprouted all the things and he was the clear winner, they took their staffs just to make sure. So let's see. I want to share with you an amazing piece of Rav Moshe. And then we'll learn two more pieces about this story. We don't often focus enough on this part of the story. So Rav Moshe has a beautiful piece. And again, there is so much in this parsha about learning what it means to serve God. So Rav Moshe says, it's a short comment. I'll read a little bit of it. He quotes the Gemara in Brachos, Ashrei mi she'amalo b'Torah, right? You only are praised are those that work hard. He says the following. Nira du mishum she'ha'amal ba'atzmo, Hudavar chashuv me'od kemo ha-mitzvah. That line should be a bumper sticker for every single person and for sure for adults and children. That the work we do in Judaism, the hard work, the effort, that in of itself is the mitzvah. That Judaism is not only a sum game. All right, I did all these X amount of mitzvahs. Now I've earned enough schar, right? Like you're playing a video game. I got enough points, I can get to the next level. That's not how it works, right? Imagine if video games worked this way. You worked really hard, you get to the next level. Right? So he says, "Lanias da'iti lo amel bin yani ha'chaim shrak ha'schar sheba mizehu ha'ikar. V'ha amel rag mishum she'er, 1 second. Yeah. Avaha amel b'torah uve mitzvos. In general, if I really work hard in this world, but I don't make something, I don't make enough money, then my hard work didn't seem to pay off. But when it comes to Torah, that in and of itself is growth. And he says, V'yesh lefareish, right here, batam shagama titzim v'afrachim ayum shkedim m'mata shal aron ki kulam kedoshim. What's with the flower? What's with the sprouting? And he says, mikevan shema shezacha aron lekehunam neshachom ma'asav sharmachol amal v'yigasa lohayivam shadavar lorik. It wasn't nothing. The hard work that we put into Judaism is as important as the Judaism itself. It is a very important idea. But let me share with you two other ideas. First is from Zalman Sarutskin. So Zalman Sarutskin says, why in the world would these shvatim take home their staff? Okay, right? If you give back a test to a kid and he got a 30 out of 100, he doesn't go home and put it on his fridge. It's Maybe if his high previously was a 10, then he would put it on his fridge. Why are they taking Vayiru Vayikhu Ishmateyu? They took it home. Why would he take it home? So Zalman Sarutskin says it's a powerful idea. He says, What was this fight about? This current fight is about who gets to be Shevet Levi. Is it just Shevet Levi or everybody else? Who gets to serve God as his servants? Now, us Kohanim think, oh, what a great life. People gave us food. Ah, oh, it was a great life. It wasn't. To be in the Beis HaMikdash meant tremendous sacrifice. There were Shevet Levi, the Shevet that served God in the Beis HaMikdash. Number one, they didn't have their own land. They were spread out among the length and breadth of Israel because they were the educators. They were spread out. So because they didn't have land, guess what else they didn't have? They didn't have food. So we got our food, the Kohanim got their food from everybody else. What happens when there's a famine? What happens when it doesn't rain? What happens when there's a drought? What happens when you didn't produce? The Shvatim fed their families and we got the Kohanim got a little bit. There was tremendous sacrifice to be Shevet Levi. It wasn't as glamorous as it might have seemed. So says Rav Sarutskin, and therefore these Shvatim wanted to show their kids, look at what we were willing to give up. We were willing to give up all of this, all of the greatness, all of the, you know, having land, having property, having food, having sustenance, we were willing to give it up to serve God. And that's why they took their staff. And how amazing is it, says the Gemara, that these staffs were passed down from generation to generation until they were lost in the Beis Hamikdash, until they were hidden by the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Meaning each Shevet saw such value in these staffs that they passed them down from one generation to the next. And that leads us to the third idea from this story, from this last piece about the fighting over who gets to be Shevet Levi. And it comes from Rav Schneer Cutler. It's very interesting that Rav Schneer Cutler's yard site is also tonight. Schneer Cutler took over his father, the great Rav Aaron Cutler, the great Rashiva in Lakewood, one of the pillars in the rebuilding of American Orthodoxy, right? And you know, not just Lakewood, but in the Sheres HaPleita and in building up Orthodoxy once again within America as Rav Aaron Cutler, and his son is Rav Schneer Cutler. And he took over as the head of Lakewood. So Schneer Cutler offers the following suggestion. He says, why was there a need for another miracle again? Didn't they see? Let's remember, the fire came down, took the right, you know, Moshe. Then the ground swallowed up Korach. Why do they need another miracle? Another miracle, right? Like, I mean, it overstimulated. So says Rav Schneer Cutler, Korach thinks the only servant of God is one person only. Who's the only person that can serve God? The person who can do that is the Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash. And only that individual, so pure and so holy, he can serve God. Everyone else, no matter who you are, no matter what role you have, it doesn't compare. And we know that nothing could be farther from the truth. In fact, there is an epilogue to the story of Korach and his family. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that based on the Pasuk, Uvnei Korach lo mesu, that they didn't die, that at the time of their debate, the children contemplated doing tshuva. So the Gemara says that what happens, they therefore an elevated area was set aside for them in Gehenna, and there they sing songs of praise to God. That's where they got to go. And he says that standing on the edge of Gehenna, do the sons of Korach finally, this is amazing, they finally realize, even in Gehenna, even at the darkest depths of where a person could go, you could sing praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even at the ends of the earth, one could still come close to God. You don't have to be the Kohen Gadol on the Beis HaMikdash. Now we understand why there needed to be one more miracle. Because every Shevet thought, if only I was in the Beis HaMikdash, we would thrive. If we were in the Beis HaMikdash, we'd be the best servants of God. If we were in the Beis HaMikdash, the flowers would blossom. The Jewish people should not make that error of thinking that they would only blossom in the Beis HaMikdash, only if I was allowed inside. God showed them that's false. One Shevet, and their flowers, their staff will blossom, but everyone else will blossom everywhere else. You don't have to be inside the Beis HaMikdash. It's an amazing idea. Everybody else looked at it. Come on. My staff didn't blossom. And Hashem's saying, once one will blossom here, but everybody else will blossom everywhere else. Korach gravely misunderstood what it means to lead a religious life. Right? In fact, I mentioned Rabbi Sarutzkin. Think about for a second, the Yom Kippur. So, in Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol goes to the mikveh a number of times. In between, he changes clothing. He always goes to the mikveh. He goes to the mikveh a lot on Yom Kippur. So if Sarutzkin asked, why does he go to the mikveh when he's changing from the holiest clothes, the big day of Yom Kippur, to the regular clothing? Why would he do a tahara then? That's not purifying. And he says, because when I change into everyday clothes, that's also kedusha. That's also holiness. And Korach misunderstood this idea. And there is no better time than a shir like this on a yartzeit of Rabbi of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who throughout his life, this is the lesson he wanted to teach Jews. no matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter what has happened to you, how far you might have gone, or how close you never might have gotten, you could connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu wherever you are. That was the message of the Rebbe. That's the idea of Shlichim. That's the idea of how the Rebbe cared. You know, they would ask the Rebbe would stay up late. Read Telushkin's book on the Rebbe. The Rebbe didn't sleep. Rebbe Mamish would stay up till every hour. And one time, he would go through every letter. He would respond personally. It's amazing stories. You know, there was just a story someone shared with me recently that one of the Shlichim in Pittsburgh, when she was a girl, she lived in Ireland. And she didn't have a lot of friends. She had one friend. And that friend had a loss in her family. So we're going, a Shliach in Pittsburgh, when she grew up in Ireland, and she had a friend all the way back then. And that friend suffered a loss of her father. And then when she was a kid, she wrote the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And she said, what can I tell my friend, or what encouragement can I give her? Years later, this woman who becomes the Shliach in Pittsburgh eventually has her first meeting with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the Rebbe says to this woman, how's your friend doing? How's your friend doing? The Rebbe cared about every Jew. And he would stay up late, responding to these letters. They said, don't you get tired? And he says, what I'm going, every one of these is a diamond. Right? And when you're counting money and everyone's a diamond, you're not tiring. And that when the Rebbe cared about each and every individual Jew, but not just cared that I love you, that you have potential to reach the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's Korach sitting there on the steps of Gehenim, singing praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's this final piece. Hashem says, I'll give you one more miracle because I want you to know wherever you find yourself, you can connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think if there is any lesson that we have learned, even as shuls have reopened, albeit slowly, with now everybody's back in, and it's not maybe what we thought the rollout would look like 2.5 months ago. But what we've learned over the last 3.5 months is that we can connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu wherever and however and wherever we might be. We can have meaningful davening, meaningful learning, meaningful connections outside the normal framework and structure that we're used to, outside of a school building, a shul building, a beis medrash. Yes, we need them. They're important community buildings and institutions, but we have the opportunity to connect wherever we are. And that's this message of Shner Kotler, of Moshe, of Hashem to Korach. You don't need to be in the Ohel Moed. You know, and sometimes we think that if I was there, it's almost sometimes an excuse. If I was there and I had a better this and a better that and a better upbringing and a better, Gemara skills, Chumash, then I would be an Eved Hashem. If I loved davening, we use it sometimes to say, and Hashem saying, you could be anywhere, wherever you are. That connection could take on a million different layers. And that's this final piece. So it begins with Korach's challenge, into which Moshe is saying, we are holy. There needs to be a hierarchy that doesn't take away from your connection to God. And in fact, when you worship God in the right way, you induce that emotion. And at the end, Hashem says, you don't need to be in the Ohel Moed. You don't need the Mishkan. One shave it had to be. But you can each maintain and reach that level of connection wherever you find yourselves. And I think it's a very, very appropriate from the art set of Lubavitcher Rebbe, say, Chassidus Livracha, to share that idea of something that he really sought to achieve and which is still being achieved until this day. All right, so Amir Tashem,